なそう、ほなそう。Damala, what's today? Friday. She thinks it's Friday. You're close. I just spoke with my wife. It's Thursday. But what it really is bodhicitta day. That's what it really is. Today is bodhicitta day. You must have seen it coming. Right? It's kind of obvious. I mean, you get up to this haksam, this extraordinary resolve, then you can't stop there. Because something has to happen. And that is, here you are making this extraordinary resolve. I mean, did you really listen to that resolve yesterday? I mean, it's like your head should blow off. Really. You're making a promise. I mean, it's kind of like, I promise to pay you back the loan I gave you. It's a promise. That means you have to carry through. That's a promise, right? An intention. There are a lot of teachings in Buddhism about making a promise to give something and then not doing it. The karma from that is not good at all. It's called karma to be born as a preta, right? So, you made a promise yesterday, sorry. I would suggest you don't back out because you might be born as a preta for three countless eons. And no, I'm not kidding. So you better come up with a plan. You know, if I tell you, you owe me $3 trillion, and you say, okay, I'll pay you back. come up with a plan. Probably you'll need more than one lifetime. $3 trillion is a lot of money, right? So you owe me. So, bodhicitta, then we need to come up with a plan. And that is, you recall the resolve, it's very straightforward. I mean, it's not difficult to understand, it's hard to fathom. And that is, the resolve is, I resolve, I promise, pledge, intend to free all sentient beings from all suffering, all obscurations, all causes of suffering, and bring each one to a state of enlightenment, perfect enlightenment. So that's it. Nothing difficult to understand there. Difficult to carry through. And then we need to get serious, because this is actually not playing around. This is, you know, it's not a game. There could be nothing more serious, actually, I think, in the universe than this. This is it. And then you need to take stock. If you say, I'll pay you $3 trillion, good. How much do you have in your bank? Hosa, a few thousand, some thousand? Yeah, that's enough, that's enough. you don't need to be too specific. I'm not the tax person coming. But you have something, but close to $3 trillion or not so close? Kind of close. Well, let me tell you about Tuscany. I'm presuming she was joking, so I will not take that really seriously. But let's imagine you don't have really close to $3 trillion, and you promise to pay it back. Then you figure, okay, how are you going to pay it back? Well, okay, now let's get real. Let's go back to that resolve, and how are you going to do that? You look at your own bank account. You look, well, in terms of shamatha, how are you doing? How's it coming along? And how's your vipassana? And what's the degree of realization of stage of generation and completion, of realization of rikpa, and how's your tutkal practice coming along? You know, so like that. And then you can see probably that you're more or less in the situation I am, and that is, it's like being at the base of the valley, the closest valley to Mount Everest, and you're still pretty high. It's still pretty high there, but nevertheless, Mount Everest is very far above you. But you've made some progress to get to the valley, you know, where you can drive your Jeep. And then you're looking up like that, and let's imagine it's a clear day, which is not very common, but clear day do happen, yeah? We have a Lama Chanchips from Nepal. So sometimes you can actually see the peak on a really clear day. And so you imagine you're looking up there, and you say, okay, I'm going to get to the top of Mount Everest. But right now, I'm where I just parked my Jeep. So clearly, I'm going to have to do something besides, you know, I have to get off the road. I have to really think about scaling this mountain. And so when you look at your own situation, that you have all mental afflictions, you have all obscurations, and you've just basically just set out on the path, then the strategy has to be, for this to be practical, to actually, you know, carry through, it's really not practical until you're a Buddha. Even up to that point, it's not really enough. And it's for a very simple reason, and that is if you're leading, go back to the American West, if you're a person who's leading a wagon train, and people are signing up and they say, and you tell them, I'm going to take you all the way to the Pacific Coast. Okay, this just happened, lots. I'll take you all the way to the Pacific Coast. So rally around, I'll take you, I'll guide you, I'll look after you all the way across. I think one of the pioneers who maybe joined your wagon train might ask, well, have you been there? The Pacific Coast, have you seen it? Have you been there? And if the wagon train master says, no, actually, I've never left, gone any further west than the Mississippi, then you probably would want to look for another wagon train leader, right? So optimally, you really would go for a person, you would follow a person, you take refuge in a person, and that person would take care of you all the way through. Optimally, that really person should have been to the West Coast, been the whole path, all the way to the end, looked out on the vastness of the Pacific Ocean, and that would be a really good guide. And so clearly, if you're going to lead the wagon train of all sentient beings to the far shore, to enlightenment, there's really only one way to really do that and be able to lead all of them over. Not just one wagon train, but all of them over. You really must achieve enlightenment. It's not practical. It's good. It's great to have a Buddha nature. That's why you can make the resolve in the first place. But to carry through with it, you actually have to become a Buddha. Because, you know, cockroaches, earthworms, everybody, every sentient being has a Buddha nature. But they're not really ready to leave other sentient beings. So the blind cannot really lead the blind. And a person who's not a Buddha will not be able to lead all sentient beings to perfect enlightenment. So therefore, with this in mind, the overwhelmingly in mind, not that I don't like samsara, or I don't want to hang out for three countless eons, or I'm really impatient, or I really like Dzogchen, all those very well, but the immediate thrust, incentive, the momentum, the imperative, there's a good word, the imperative for arousing this bodhicitta, the aspiration, and the resolve to achieve enlightenment with the sake of all sentient beings is, there's no other way I can liberate all beings. It's that simple. There's no other way I can do it. I can help. I can help out here and there, and here and there, and here and there. I might even be able to lead one or two, but leading all sentient beings, I have to be in a place that is of infinite capacity to lead countless sentient beings. So that's it. It comes out of great compassion. It comes out of the great resolve. And then it comes to full flower. In the aspirational bodhicitta, which is the strong aspiration, and it's in fact more than an aspiration, it's a resolve. But then, of course, once that has arisen, then you must enter into the bodhicitta of engagement. Engage bodhicitta, and that's actually getting around and climbing up the mountain. Climbing up the mountain. So I'll linger with that analogy just a little bit longer. Because there's something really quite extraordinary about the bodhicitta itself. As Shantideva says, if you don't reflect on the benefits of bodhicitta for yourself, how will you ever get around to cultivating it for others? So just like with loving kindness, direct itself first, and then, okay, then extend it. When you see there's something just magnificently good there, perhaps of ultimate and absolute value, and I do believe that. So even if you're very much at the beginning of the path, or you haven't even reached the path, you know, a really beginner like me, beginner, 45-year-old beginner, still very true. So there it is. I'm not going to apologize or be embarrassed, or I'll say shucks. It's just, you know, it's kind of like, what can you do? You are where you are. Then just accept that. And so I do. Okay, so I'm still a beginner. So, okay. No apologies. That's it. Doing my best. So there you are at the base of the mountain, still at the base of the mountain, 45 years later, 45 lifetimes later, who knows, still at the base of the mountain. But you know where you'd like to go. And if that is a very strong, inner, intuitive, irreversible conviction, that's where I want to go. Whether it takes three countless eons to get to the top of the mountain, whether it takes 11 countless eons, whether it takes one lifetime or 13 lifetimes, this is it. This is really it. it's got to be irreversible. It can't be today, but maybe not tomorrow, or this one until I find a better one, like dating, you know. I'll go with you until I find somebody nicer, you know. It's not like that. It can't be like that. If it is, and then just cool it, throttle back and, you know, make up your mind later. So this bodhicitta is something quite extraordinary, and here's an analogy I've had in mind quite a long time. It's like standing at the bottom of Mount Everest with a very long rope and a grappling hook. A hook, yeah? Grappling hook. And you're looking up there, and you've got really strong arms. You're Superman. And you take your hook, and then you... And you throw the hook so it lands right on top of the peak. The hook, now on top of Mount McKinley, and you have a rope. And then you tug it, and so now it's taut. Okay? So there you are at the base of Mount McKinley. This is thousands and thousands and thousands of feet above where you are right now. But you just threw the grappling hook all the way to the very peak, right where you want to go. The tippy top, right? And you pull it taut. You say, okay, there it is. Now you have only one thing to do now. You've promised all sentient beings you're going to get to the top, and once you're there, you're going to liberate all sentient beings. You really have only one thing to do. Not go up this way or that way, not go downhill, not build a little house here and start a little restaurant there. Open up a little gift shop. You know, Padmasambhava statues for sale. No. You just have one thing to do, and that is start climbing. But you really have confidence that you have the rope, and there's Mount McKinley, and there's a rope connecting the two of you. And you just kind of resolve, I'm just going to keep on pulling, and however long it takes. Maybe I'll develop Superman muscles, and I can zip up quickly. Maybe I'll get ill and have very little weak, and which be very weak, and then I can only go slowly. But the only point is, I'm going in this direction. And this is it. And however long it takes, this is it. So it's a resolve. It's a resolve unlike resolve that almost anybody else makes. Because if this is resolve, is sincere, if bodhicitta is real, then you're making this resolve from now until enlightenment. It's much, I mean, a marriage, even a really wonderful marriage, the marriage vows actually do terminate when one of the two dies. It's finished. It's finished, right? And there are other vows, like monastic vows. You have no monastic vows in the bardo. Once you're bardo, you've disrobed. You're naked. You know, so you're no longer a monk or nun in the bardo. Nobody's born as a monk or nun. You have to take precepts all over again. But you can be born with bodhisattva precepts. Now, what's the good of that? You remember the issue of attachment to becoming? Some people have attachment to non-becoming. The annihilationists, and this wonderful scholar that I'll keep him anonymous, but he's an outstanding scholar of Theravada Buddhism, Pali Canon, and so forth. He's not an annihilationist. He believes that when an arhat dies, it's not annihilation, just that. There's not annihilation. But there are other reputable Theravada scholars who believe it is an annihilation. My interpretation as a follower, not of Theravada, but of Mahayana, is I think those who are seriously considering these Theravada scholars, and they're not unintelligent, and they're not lacking in erudition, but when they actually do say and believe that the culmination of the path is total irreversible annihilation, that your five skandhas, every vestige of you, is terminated without trace, and they want that. To my mind, I cannot avoid the conclusion they are attached to annihilation, to not becoming, because they want that more than anything else. They want what the materialists think they get for free. The materialists, all I have to do is wait, and I get total annihilation. All my problems are over. And the Theravada Buddha said, oh, I wish it were that easy, but we'll still get there. But you just don't know anything about consciousness. But it's going to take us many lifetimes to be able to get what you materialists think you get for free. Total annihilation. Well, to my mind, that is simply attachment to non-becoming. And I think they're profoundly wrong. And I have absolutely no interest in that. Even though sometimes it's appealing. I mean, the materialist is the most appealing. All your problems are over. Okay, that's nice. Wish it were so. But unfortunately, it's just not the case. That's the way it is. But this is interesting now, isn't it? I'm going to probably go on a little bit this morning. This is bodhicitta. And we'll be taking, for anybody who wants to this morning, by podcast, the We Podders or the I Podders here, anybody who wants to take bodhisattva precepts, we can take them this morning, and we'll take them with Shantideva. It'll be his words. I have nothing to offer, except for sharing his words with you. But there's something interesting here. And that is when you say, however many lifetimes it takes, I resolve, intend to achieve enlightenment, perfect enlightenment, in order to liberate all sentient beings. Now we've got a plan. If you're not thinking about achieving enlightenment and you're still promising all sentient beings will give you freedom, they could all rally around and say, how are you going to do that? It was an awfully nice promise. We appreciate that. But how? And if you don't have a how, if you're not developing bodhicitta, if that hasn't come to mind, then you're going to sit there with your mouth hanging open. It just seemed like a good idea at the time, you know? So bodhicitta is the only thing that makes that real. But now, if you have that resolve, this is an intention, this is a desire. There's no question about it, it's a desire, right? It's not an attachment, not a mental affliction. There's nothing afflictive about it. But it is a desire, that's for sure. And it is a desire to become a Buddha, and it is a desire from lifetime to lifetime, however many lifetimes that may be, to proceeding on this path irreversibly. Now that is just unquestionably a desire. And here's the deal. As long as you're holding that desire, it is a desire to become further and further along the path, and eventually the desire to become a Buddha. That will keep you in samsara. But samsara on a trajectory and not a samsara in a circular motion. Right? As long as there's an aspiration, I wish to achieve Buddhahood that I've not achieved yet. I'm not, clearly. I'm a sentient being. This is why I have my ability. I'm so limited. I'm a sentient being. I'm painfully, obviously, a sentient being. But I don't want to remain a sentient being. I want to become a Buddha. And here's the words, Sangi Gopam Topna Sampa. The thought, may I achieve Buddhahood? That's to acquire something. Achieve means it's topa, means to get, to acquire, to obtain. That's the word they use. So we can't back up from that. It's not attachment. Look at it's not rooted in delusion and so forth and so on. It's not exaggerating and so forth. But here's the deal about this. And that is every morning when your first thought, I mean literally the first thought, it is the first thought for the Dalai Lama. Somebody asked him, what's your first thought in the morning? He said, bodhicitta. You wake up with bodhicitta. I would suggest make that a habit. Wake up, first thought, bodhicitta. Second thought, anything else that's meaningful. First thought, bodhicitta. If that's your first thought, and that's your lingering thought, your abiding thought, if that's your prime directive, and you die this afternoon, you die tomorrow, you die in 10 years, and you're still holding that thought, still holding that resolve, that aspiration, I want to become a Buddha. This means there's something called in Tibetan, le to. Leftover karma. You're not finished. You're not finished. You still wanted to get something done you haven't done. And so le to is what connects one lifetime to another. If in this lifetime you really wanted to become wealthy like Donald Trump, oh, Donald Trump, I wish I could trump Donald Trump and have 11 billion instead of only 10 billion. And you don't make it. You know, your life wasn't long enough. You only made, 500,000. Not quite, not there. You have some leto, you have some leftover karma. That means you'll still be on the path to achieving Trumphood in a future lifetime. Now, if you've lived a virtuous life as a very, let's say, very ethical businessman, benevolent, philanthropist, and so forth, but you'd really like to be, a Donald Trump, but you live an ethical life, a virtuous life, a generous life, then you will have leto, and you'll be one of those little kids that's just a whiz at entrepreneurial stuff, business. Like me when I was 12 years old. I would go off and buy candy. Candy bars cost a nickel back then, 5 cents. And I buy them bulk at 3 cents, take them to school, and sell them for 10 cents. Because I knew kids have immediate gratification needs. And I didn't. I had that as a real quality early on. I didn't have immediate gratification. So I'd bring a bag full of candy, eat none of it, and make 7 cents on the candy bar. I too could have been Trump. but I lost my way. And somehow I found up here. So that's one kind of leto. And there's, you can imagine how many others. You'd like to be a glamorous movie star. You'd like to be Miss Beauty something, Miss Spain or whatever. You know, well, okay, if not in this lifetime, that's going to be what's going to carry you across. Wealthy, famous, rich, powerful, attractive, and so forth and so on. But this one is bodhicitta. Which means as long as you're sustaining that, that will keep on bringing you back to the path, to teachers, to the Dharma. Lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Start with bodhicitta, end with dedication of merit. And whether you've achieved shamatha in this lifetime, or vipassana, or tutkhil, tekshu, and so forth, that's all very nice, it's all very good. But it's all secondary. The most important thing is continuity. Through a lifetime and from lifetime to lifetime, from now until enlightenment. That's what's important. Not whether you achieve shamatha in this lifetime, or vipassana, or tekshu, or tutkhil. It's the bodhicitta that will connect you. The bodhicitta motivation and the dedication of merit. That's what's going to make the continuity. If you don't have that, you just like Dzogchen a whole lot. Well, you like Dzogchen this lifetime, but next time you might really like being a cowboy. Or something else that catches your fancy. The fad of the lifetime. Maybe you'd be born in a cowboy family. And they just think the best thing you can possibly do is ride in a rodeo. In which case, you probably want to be a rodeo rider in that lifetime. Unless bodhicitta is carrying you. So, this is what makes the continuity. This is what makes the coherence. This is what holds it all together. It's the tie that binds. It is the string that connects lifetime to lifetime. If you can complete in this lifetime, that's really best. Because here you have all the circumstances. But who can get a guarantee? Who can guarantee whether we'll have a retreat tomorrow? Maybe the retreat's going to be over tomorrow because I die tonight. There's no telling. There's no telling, really. For any of us here, there's no telling. So when a friend of mine said, he's just a little bit older than me, said, I'm too old to die young. That's me. If somebody, Alan died at 65. So, well, that's a pretty good life. It wasn't young. So I'm too old to die young. So die anytime, right? That's okay. What's not okay is having future lifetimes with no Dharma. To my mind, that's not okay. That's like about as profoundly not okay as possible. So bodhicitta, it's never too early, as Geshe-ngo and Taiye told me. It's never too early. If this is what your heart tells you, if this is what intuition is, you don't maybe understand that much about Buddha Dharma, Madhyamaka and philosophy and all of this, the six realms. But if you can see a higher good than this, if you can see a higher good, if you can imagine a higher good, then to achieve perfect awakening for the sake of all sentient beings, to liberate each one, if you can imagine something better than that, go for that. I can't imagine anything better than this, in this or in any future lifetime. So, let's practice. So we'll do the opening prayers. If you can stay vertical, that would be good. If you're very uncomfortable, then go horizontal. Not that important. And when it comes to, we'll be reciting verses in the same chapter from Chandadeva, the third chapter, reciting those. I really don't have it in me to want to coerce people to do anything at all, even good things. It's not my temperament. It's just not my temperament. It's not just not where it's not something I'm interested in. Trying to bend people to my will or proselytize or evangelize. When I was a little kid, if you asked me what did I want to grow up when I grew up, I would tell you. When I was a little kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? Not a missionary. Literally. And here I am in Australia wearing robes. Spreading the word over the internet. The good word, the good news. What to do? So, but it's still true. It was true then, it's true now. I have no interest whatsoever. and trying to persuade other people, oh, please agree with me, please follow my path. I just have no interest. And so if this, at right now, or the next half an hour, if this whole theme of bodhicitta is something you perhaps find interesting, you'd like to give further thought to, but it's not where you are right now, then when we're doing the liturgy, what I would suggest is rest your mind in its natural state. Nobody's going to notice, and nobody's going to judge, and you absolutely have no judgment from me, and I won't be watching anyway. But what I suggest is don't go through an empty ritual. The words are too important. They're sacred. This is Shantideva's, not my words. It's Shantideva's words. The words are sacred. And so don't recite them. And don't feel bad about it. If today's not the day, if maybe this is not your path, that's absolutely fine. And I cannot say that more sincerely than I just said it. So I won't say it twice. Rest your mind in its natural state. And it's perfectly fine. And if intuitively you feel this is clearly and irreversibly the path you wish to follow, the Bodhisattva path to perfect awakening, then join me and we'll take the Bodhisattva precepts together. As the Buddha is our witness, as we do this from the perspective of pristine awareness, pure vision. Okay? Namo lama deshe dupe ku kunjo sumge ranjin la datan do du semjin nam chanju badu kyapsu chi. Namo, in the lama who is the embodiment of the sugatas, of the nature of the three jewels, I, together with the beings of the six realms, take refuge until our enlightenment. Semgen do kundun du lama sangye dupne ni Kan la kan du tin le ki do do wa dam cha wo. For the sake of all beings, I generate the spirit of awakening and cultivate the realization of the Lama as Buddha. By means of enlightened activity, I shall train each being according to their needs, and I vow to liberate the world. Om Oge Yuke Nupcham Sam Bema Gesa Dumbola Yamsen Choki Modub Nye Pema June Shesuta Kodu Kando Mambu Ko Keki Jesu Datupki Jinge Lapche Sheksu Su Guru Pema Siddhi Om. Om. In the northwest frontier of Odiana, in the heart of a lotus, sits the one renowned as Padmasambhava, who achieved the wondrous supreme city and is surrounded by a host of many dakinis. Following in your footsteps, I devote myself to practice. Please come forth and bestow your blessings. Guru Pema Siddhi Hung. Guru Pema Siddhi Hung. you'd like to switch positions, please do so now. Rest in awareness. Utterly at ease. In uncontrived, unmodified awareness. A total rest, a release of all grasping. Rest in the knowing of knowing, the sheer cognizance of awareness. Then turn on the light of the luminosity of your awareness. Let the light take on the form of your form. In a purified manifestation, translucent, insubstantial, illuminated by the orb of light at your heart. With your body, speech, and mind indivisible from that of Guru Padmasambhava, the synthesis, the embodiment of all the Buddhas. Let the light of your awareness illuminate a field of Buddhas in the space in front of you. Symbolized by Buddha Shakyamuni in the center, surrounded by a host of bodhisattvas. And symbols of the Dharma manifesting as volumes of the perfection of wisdom. And volumes of the great perfection and of Mahamudra. And round about you visualize all sentient beings as your witness. The Buddhas as your witness, all sentient beings as your witness. As if this were your coronation day. The day you are anointed a prince or princess in the family of the Buddhas. A Jina or Jinaputra, a child of the Jinas, a child of the victorious ones. Arouse briefly now the extraordinary resolve to liberate all sentient beings, every sentient being throughout space, from all suffering, all causes of suffering, and to bring each one to perfect awakening. In the midst of this host of sentient beings and this host of enlightened ones, of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, of Viras and Dakinis. Let's follow in the footsteps of the quintessential Bodhisattva, Shantideva. And he writes, and we share with him. Just as the Sugatas, those who've gone to bliss, which is to say the Buddhas, just as the Sugatas of old adopted the spirit of awakening, bodhicitta, and just as they properly conformed to the practice of the Bodhisattvas, so I myself shall generate the spirit of awakening, bodhicitta, for the sake of the world, and so I myself shall properly engage in those practices. In this way, arouse bodhicitta. And take upon yourself the bodhisattva precept. And when I snap my fingers, imagine in that moment, if you've not received the bodhisattva vow in the past, you do so now, granted by the Buddha. Upon gladly adopting the spirit of awakening in this way, an intelligent person should thus nurture the spirit, this bodhicitta, in order to fulfill his wish. So the whole point here is to arouse bodhicitta and to sustain it as continuously as possible, throughout the course of this lifetime and throughout all lifetimes, until we have manifestly realized perfect awakening. Now my life is fruitful. Human existence is well obtained. Today I have been born into the family of the Buddhas. Now, I am a child of the Buddha. Thus, whatever I do now should accord with the Bodhisattva family. And it should not be like a stain on this pure family. Just as a blind man might find a jewel amongst heaps of rubbish, so this spirit of awakening has somehow arisen in me. It is the elixir of life, produced to vanquish death in the world. It is an inexhaustible treasure, eliminating the poverty of the world. It is the supreme medicine that alleviates the illness of the world. It is the tree of rest for beings exhausted from wandering on the pathways of mundane existence. It is the universal bridge for all travelers on their crossing over miserable states of existence. It is the rising moon of the mind that soothes the mental afflictions of the world. It is the great sun, dispelling the darkness of the world's ignorance. It is the fresh butter formed from churning the milk of Dharma. For the caravan of beings traveling on the path of mundane existence and starving for the meal of happiness, it is the feast of happiness that satisfies all sentient beings who have come as guests. Today, I invite the world to sugatahood and temporal happiness. May the gods, asuras, and others rejoice in the presence of all the protectors, which is to say, of course, all the Buddhas. So in this way, Shantideva arouses bodhicitta and makes the pledge in the presence of all the Buddhas and to all sentient beings. Sustaining this motivation, let's rest in this pure vision. With each in-breath, with each out-breath, draw in the blessings of all the Buddhas, all the awakened ones, converging in upon you with every out-breath. Begin right now in this virtual reality, in this realm of possibility. Imagine the light flowing from your heart in all directions, alleviating here and now the suffering of the world, purifying all afflictions, all obscurations, all negative karma. With each out-breath, imagine these rays of light taking on the form of whatever is needed in guiding each sentient being to their own perfect awakening. Breathe in, breathe out. There must come a point on the path in which all striving ceases. All aspiration to modify your mind ceases. All activity ceases. It is that point when you recognize your awareness is already Dhammakaya, and you are already a Buddha. Primordially free of all obscurations and complete with all the perfect qualities of enlightenment. That is the end of striving. And that is the culmination of the path. Rest there now. Take the fruition and bring it into the moment. I was listening to the comments before the meditation. I was quite happy with them. With one exception, there was one, it was kind of like driving on a smooth road and then hitting a pothole and then moving on. There was one pothole. I was listening and there's just one, like, a pothole. It's kind of like startle. I wonder if you saw it. That I won't ask, but I saw it. It was definitely just like a pothole. Like, that wasn't smooth. It was when I said that this aspiration, this throwing the hook, the rope, and all of that, this aspiration is not rooted in delusion. Well, it's rooted in the belief that you're not a sentient being. Because if you didn't have that, there would be no reason to aspire to become Buddha. Why do you aspire to be what you already are? And so it is rooted in grasping, subtle grasping, but it is grasping. I'm a sentient being. I'm not a Buddha yet. I hope to be one day. May I become. And that is grasping. And that is delusion. It's the best delusion there is. And there's all kinds of delusion. This is the best one. But it's still a delusion. And in Dzogchen, we seek to overcome that delusion as swiftly as possible. And we practice then, in Dzogchen practice, with no striving, and nothing to be accomplished, and nothing to do. Because there is a valid perspective from which you're already a Buddha. It's not that you simply have the potential to be a Buddha, you actually are a Buddha. And we seek to release into that perspective as swiftly as possible. And that's all there is to Dzogchen. And that's all there is to the Dzogchen view. And so, as I was listening to Yangtan Rinpoche this morning, he talked about exactly this point. That from the Dzogchen perspective, it's not that we have a potential to be Buddha, we actually are already Buddha. And then I couldn't help but think of, again, the clinging to the four, Jemajita, parting from the four attachments from Gunga Nyingbo. And then, Zimba Jung the Tawa Me, if grasping is still arising, you don't have the view. You're not there yet. And that can be interpreted in many ways. Well, here's the Dzogchen view. If you're still grasping the sense, I'm a sentient being, even nominally, even conventionally, let alone reify, even nominally, if you think that's still who you are, if you're still even nominally grasping, I'm a sentient being, I'm a sentient being, you don't have the Dzogchen view. And that's ultimate bodhicitta. Good. Enjoy your day.